This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. You know, the Johnson & Johnson commercials make it look so easy. Cuddly new baby, smiling happy mom. But the reality can be a lot less sweet. Up to 1 in 5 new mothers suffer from a postpartum mood disorder like depression. And a new study reveals that 20% of those mothers don't report symptoms to their doctors even when they're asked directly. Betty Shannon Pravad was the paper's lead author. She's a practicing clinical psychologist who's now pursuing her PhD at North Carolina State University, and she's here to talk about her findings and possible solutions. Betty Shannon, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about what you were seeing in your clinical practice that led you to some of the questions in this study.
Sure. So I came back to work with moms after I had my own children, and loved being able to work with moms because for the most part, they got better. But I got to be a little disillusioned and frustrated because there were lots of moms who couldn't either afford to see me. And then oftentimes there were moms that were saying the same things over and over again in session. You know, I'd hear the same story from one mom to the other. They weren't getting support. They were feeling guilty. They were feeling frustrated. And so it really led me to think that maybe we could be doing something better as a community. But I didn't have any training in community level interventions. And so that led me to go back to graduate school. And recently we've had a call to do some universal screening so that all moms should have some type of mental health screening either during pregnancy or following the delivery. And while that's wonderful, it got me thinking, you know, well, what about the moms who might not feel comfortable sharing that information? Would screening actually reach everyone? So that was one of the questions that we decided to look at with this particular study.
So let's take a broader look now. How prevalent is postpartum mood disorder in general?
So in general, between 10 and 20% of women will experience a postpartum mood disorder after they have a child. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's your first baby. Sometimes women will have it with their first child and won't have it with subsequent children. And then sometimes women will not have it with their first child, but will have it with children later on. And then postpartum mood disorders broadly are encompassing depression and anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder. And then, unfortunately, psychosis is also included in that, although that's a much smaller percentage of folks will experience that. In fact, less than 1%. But that seems to be what gets the most media coverage.
And in your practice, can you give us a sense of what the women you've treated with are struggling with, what this means to them on a day-to-day basis?
Sure. So there's a lot of sadness, a lot of anxiety, excessive worry. For them specifically, it may be that they feel guilty because they're not bonding with their children. Oftentimes, women will experience irritability and anxiety and anger that may be directed more at their spouse, at friends and family, usually not actually at the baby, but still some frustration, and then just an overall sense of failure that they are not matching that image of what motherhood was supposed to be and what it was supposed to look like.
And when these symptoms present and when a mother talks about these things and comes to you for help or another provider, what do you do?
So we try to normalize it to begin with. Sometimes they will meet with either a psychiatrist or a general practitioner for medication, but that's not always necessary. It really depends on the severity of those symptoms and what those specific symptoms are.
All right, so now those are the cases that are reported, and you say anywhere from 10 to 20% of moms report some form of mood disorder postpartum. Mm-hmm. But now what you're finding is 1 in 5 of those mothers are not actually reporting
Correct.
The symptoms that they have. Tell us more about that.
Well, so one of the things that we found was that women are afraid of their practitioners. Sometimes it's also family members, but specifically their healthcare providers judging them. So there's a lot of stigma. That was the primary barrier to treatment that we saw in our study. And so, you know, really being afraid of, you know, whether their baby's going to get taken away, are they going to be perceived as, you know, a failure as a mother? Is CPS going to get called in?
Protective services.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so those are just some of the barriers that are preventing women from accessing treatment. We didn't have women tell us why they didn't share specifically. So that's definitely an avenue that I want to pursue. So we have a little bit more context about specifically what is it that keeps them from sharing. we do know from other research that physicians who take a holistic perspective for women are better at getting women to share what's going on.
And what would that mean?
So, you know, taking a perspective where they care about the mom as a whole, not just about symptoms. So taking time to normalize those emotional reactions, being able to say, you know, this parenting thing is hard. How are you doing? Like, really, how are you doing? What's the hardest thing that you've got going on? Rather than, so, here's a questionnaire.
A checklist.
Here's a checklist.
Depressed.
Fill it out.
Yeah.
Right. You know, are you being able to find times that you can enjoy the baby? Do you find time to enjoy time for yourself? Do you have time to, are you able to sleep when the baby is sleeping? Are you able to get out and laugh at things that you used to be able to laugh about? Are you worrying excessively? A lot of times moms will have intrusive thoughts. So those would be, you know, images that pop into their minds of harm that has happened to the baby, and it freaks them out, rightly so. But oftentimes they will then jump to this assumption that if they've had that thought, then it means that they want to do that, or that they are a danger to their baby. And really, what more oftentimes it's their protective mom kicking into overdrive, and this mama bear is just thinking about all worst case possibilities. And, you know, some folks will be able to say, okay, right, so I need to make sure, you know, I've got somebody in the bathtub with me, you know, while I'm washing the baby, just in case the baby gets slippery. But oftentimes moms will not jump to that problem solving and instead fear themselves and their ability to care for the baby.
So how did you get moms to talk about things that they're apparently not talking to other doctors about?
You mean in the case of the study?
In the study, yeah.
Well, what we found just for mental health studies in general is that when you're an anonymous online survey participant, you're willing to share information that can't be tracked back to you directly. And so that's how they were willing to share that they didn't share with a healthcare provider.
You also found some characteristics among those women that distinguished to some degree women who might and might not report symptoms. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. So we found that women who had better support networks and women who were experiencing more stress were more likely to share with their healthcare provider. And so we think that those might be some areas that we could target with intervention. Obviously, we don't want stress moms out more. But instead, what we would want to do is look at that social support network and see if we could target those in multiple ways. So one idea that I had was a lot of women will think about, well, what's my birth plan going to be before they deliver? And so perhaps we could encourage women to think about their post-delivery plan. What is that social support network going to look like? Who can they turn to? Alternately, we could also see if we could do some public service announcements or certain interventions where we're training those social support individuals to be able to understand and identify, well, what does a postpartum mood disorder look like? How can you talk to those moms about it? What are things that they can do to offer more both instrumental and emotional support to those moms?
You know, the higher stress level being more likely to report doesn't surprise me much. I mean, to some extent, it hurts more, and therefore I can't not tell you.
Absolutely.
But what about the support network? That's interesting to me. If you have a bigger, wider, more robust support network, you are more likely to report that. It only surprises me in that if you're afraid of stigma, that's more people you could disappoint if ever they found out.
Sure. And I don't know, quite honestly. And so that would definitely be something we want to dig back into. One of the things that we have found, or not me specifically, but this research has found, is that social support, better social support actually is correlated with less postpartum mood disruption. So it may be that part of that is because you're getting treatment more quickly. It could also be that you feel more comfortable sharing those emotions because people are encouraging you to talk about those experiences that you're having. What is sad, though, is that the people who are most at risk are those without support and thus also not then seeking treatment as well.
What are some other recommendations that you would make just based on this preliminary? I know you're going to want to do some more research, but in terms of now what we can do and maybe building a toolkit, do you have any preliminary ideas?
Sure. Well, definitely, you know, working a way in to develop that social support network. Right. How can we help moms do that proactively? I would love to see a preparing for parenthood class rather than a preparing for childbirth class. I have no data on that right now. That's like the goal down the road. But where we can, you know, encourage moms moms, to bring in those partners, to bring in those family members and friends, to give them the language to help. Also, really working with physicians and healthcare providers to give them, whether it be from a policy level, more time with moms, more training in mental health services, but at the very least, the ability to just talk to moms from a person-to-person level, you know, to normalize what a postpartum mood disorder would look like.
And I'd be curious to know, you talked about normalization, the sense that a lot of moms, especially if you get in a group of moms who will tell you, oh, yeah, that happened to me and that happened to me, that normalization, I would be curious to know whether that can lessen the acuity, the sense that something is really wrong, not that you're not going to feel something and not that it's going to be not different.
Sure.
So that's going to happen, but maybe the extent and the intensity of that mood might to some degree be qualified by the fact that a lot of people around you are saying, oh, yeah, that happened to me.
That's a great research question.
That's on your next report?
I think I need to add it right in. Absolutely.
And you are continuing your research?
I'm absolutely continuing on the research. We had our sample was primarily made up of white, middle-class, married women. It came from the Raleigh-Durham area.
There you go.
And so I have currently started recruiting Hispanic and Spanish-speaking women for a Spanish language survey to look at what resources they're accessing and then also what barriers they have to treatment and what their experiences are, because we know that, you know, a very narrow sample can't be translated to everyone.
Postpartum among grad students at NC State, probably not the most thorough. So you're moving on, and that's great, and we will have you back.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Thank you for this. Betty Shannon Pravat is a clinical psychologist and a PhD student at North Carolina State University, and you can find links to her research at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, what the movies get right, and then again, what they get very, very wrong about dinosaurs. We'll talk about that on The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.